Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Well, the topic today is church arguments. Before I get to that topic, Jonathan, congratulations. I just got an announcement from you that your wife is expecting your fourth child.
Yes.
And wow. This one is, you've had three boys, and this one's gender is yet to be known. But congratulations on that. I have no idea how I connected that to church arguments, but I just thought that I would mention that and give you a word of congratulations.
It's probably started a few arguments in my house, but yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. Thank you for the congratulations. I appreciate that. We're excited, and looking forward to it.
Also in my office, we have Amy Jordan. In fact, she's sitting to your left and to my right, even as we speak. And Amy is due in just a couple more weeks.
Yeah, the question is, will she still be here whenever this airs?
Yeah, we'll just have to see. If she'll be somewhere. She may not be in
this
room.
She's saying, no way.
she's ready to go in and have this child, her third girl. So at 58 years old, or almost
not
59.
Amy. That's you, right?
No. I was about to clarify. At 58 and almost 59, Nellie Jo and I do not have any announcements to make.
That's
so
good
it's
to know.
Just you younger people in this office.
Yeah. Woohoo! Go us. All right. This week, church arguments we were talking about. You had a post recently on the top 10 reasons for church arguments. It's funny that the question that came in that we'll get to at the end of the show is actually the same question that I expected to see in the first comment on the website, and it was one of them. It was about color of carpets. That seems to be the go-to thing. We'll get to that later.
Okay.
That seems to be the thing that people want to bring up about churches splitting over the color of carpet, and I'm sure it's happened, but it seems like it's exaggerated a little bit more than it should be.
It's become urban legend.
Urban legend.
Yep. Yeah.
So the first topic of church arguments is a big one, and we've talked about it here on the podcast as well as the blog about worship wars, and it's the worship and style of music.
Yeah, that's an argument that's longstanding.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
It's an easy one to discuss. It's an easy one to say that it's near the top. I do think there's some good news in it, even though it may be a gradual process. I do think this longstanding battle is diminishing. I'm seeing less arguments, though there's still plenty of them out there. And it's almost like, okay, we've done that, been there, and there's beginning to be an acceptance of the issue, but it's not going away, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. And by the time we get to the end of this podcast, we'll address perhaps the whys behind some of these.
Yes, the second one was the volume of music in the services. Now, Jordan Richmond wrote a blog post for your site last year that was, it just went kind of gangbusters. We didn't expect it, and he talked about it, and it went crazy on the website.
poor Jordan. He wrote this guest post.
It was a great post, too.
It really was, about how he measured, and I don't understand all this sound stuff. He measured the decibels or whatever it was, and he said, this is about the right sound. This is when it's too loud. Oh, my goodness, the arguments that started developing here. I lost my hearing as a result of that service. I think I have terminal cancer as a result of that service. I don't think anybody said that.
But he was even saying that it should be lower than it is in a lot of places and got pushback for it.
Oh, gosh, he got all kind of pushback for it. And, you know,
and he's a worship leader.
He's a worship leader. And I can't remember the date he wrote it, but whatever day he wrote it was many months ago. And we still get comments on that today.
All the time.
All the time we hear from different people about the volume of music in the services. So that is an issue. And, you know, sometimes I sit with, I'm no longer a pastor of a church. And so I attend services with my bride. And you know what? Sometimes I hear about that even from her in some places.
Well,
that
sometimes
we attend.
It's legitimate concern. I mean, I can remember one church that we went to here recently in town before we were at it, the church we're at right now. And 1 week, it was just loud. And I pulled out the app that Jordan had talked about on his blog post and fired it up, and it was about 105 to 110 decibels, which is really loud.
And what is acceptable? I don't remember.
He was saying between 90 and 95.
Okay, so that was very loud.
So it was an extra 10%, and it made a difference. And I found myself distracted because of the loudness of the pastor that morning.
Jonathan, my son Sam and I attended a church in the Midwest, I'll just leave it at that, not too long ago. And we had heard that one of the issues was the loudness of the music, but was the real shocker was I saw these bowls all in different places in the worship center, and I thought I'd go get me a mint, look good. They were different colored earplugs. They had earplugs for those who thought it was too loud. And I thought that was absolutely crazy. And the worship service started. I went and got me some. Whoa, that was loud.
So they knew it was an issue and they refused to do anything about it. They knew people would complain because obviously they don't put out earplugs unless people complain. Unless it was an issue for people attending.
That is true. And there's more I could say, but the more I get into the specificity of it, the more that I would identify the church. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. Number three is reasons why churches die. And somebody's got a book coming out on that soon.
Yeah, all these shameless promotions that take place. I have a book coming out on May 1st. It'll probably be in the stores in mid-April called Autopsy of a Deceased Church, and it's the result again. I'm so grateful to the readers of my blog, to the listeners of the podcast, because they tell me what they want to hear and read. And when I wrote that book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, it was a tremendous response, and I knew that I needed to expand on the post, and so I did. I wrote a book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, another one of those small books, like I'm a church member. But here's the thing about it is once you start getting into these autopsy issues, or perhaps you are communicating with the church that is dying and headed toward death, it's hard to get any type of agreement on why we are headed that way when from an outsider perspective, it is so very obvious. They're in denial, just like someone who might be in denial because they have a terminal illness.
Yeah. The fourth reason that you listed is one that we actually have never covered on the blog, and it's the proper attire for church services.
I never said anything about this, and you would have thought that it was one of my most prominent blog posts, proper attire for churches. Now, I got to make a disclaimer. I think neckties are of the devil. I think they're used to...
Amen, brother.
And I think they're...
Preach.
I think they're used to strangle people. Or men, for that matter. But I tell you, to hear all these comments, read them all, to see what was taking place, I had no idea. And some would go to the Bible, some wouldn't, and some would use the Bible one way or the other. And it was something that very much surprised me. So I need to keep my eyes and ears open as I visit churches across this American landscape to see what's going on. I will tell you this, there's absolutely no doubt that the dress for church is becoming less formal.
Yes. Dress in society is becoming less formal.
I'm a member of a church that when I started attending 8 years ago, I would say that of the men there, about half wore a tie, and I was one of them.
Now, I would have thought it had been higher.
Now, maybe one out of 30 or 40.
What does Mike preach from? What does he preach in?
He preaches from a tie most of the time.
Okay.
He preaches from a tie. He preaches to the highest level of dress, and that way that does not become an issue for him.
So that's a good tip for pastors, though. I mean, don't try to force that on your culture if your church culture is, you know, a more formal or informal, you know, kind of go with the
Tell that to some of these pastors now that I know a few because they're biologically kin to me, but we'll move on there.
Well, Sam preaches in a sport coat and a shirt like what you have on right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody can see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see, but I mean, that would be what Sam would preach in.
Yes, he
would. Now, Jess would probably be dressed like me.
Yes.
And jeans and a shirt, a button down.
That's correct. And who knows how Art would dress.
I don't know. Where's Art go to church in Raleigh?
I don't know. He's just moved there, so I don't know what he's going to join.
Oh, okay. Well, if he goes to First Baptist Durham,
he'll have one type of dress. If he goes to Mago Dei, he'll have another dress.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it just really depends on the church. So the good thing is I'm not on staff at a church, and neither are you, and we can kind of get away with whatever we want to wear.
Well, that's because of the dress code I established here, Jonathan.
And I like that.
That's why you're able to get away with it.
My first day, by the way.
Wow.
Just want to claim that. I brought jeans to Lifeway.
You're going to get me in trouble. Let's move on.
The fifth one was pastors' salaries. And you start talking about their money, and that will become an issue for church arguments.
It is, and it's unfortunate. There is a perception out there that pastors are overpaid, and that's just not true. Most pastors are underpaid. There are always exceptions, and one person's overpaid is another person's underpaid. There's even a lively discussion that has been going on that blog post about should pastors be paid? Pay them zero.
Or capping their pay. I remember one comment that wanted to cap their pay at something that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of personal agendas, it seems to be, on this issue. I'm just going to tell the listeners, most pastors, by any standard for their education, the community they live in, the church that they represent, most pastors are not overpaid.
Exactly. Now, the sixth one is one that I have a tough time finding arguments about, because I'm kind of a megachurch proponent. But megachurches is one of the big reasons for church arguments.
There are basically two perspectives that are negative on megachurches. One is they're taking people from our church.
Yeah.
That would be one.
Which does happen, but that happens at every church.
It happens at every different size church. And then another one is there's shallow teaching, preaching going on in there, and they have these events that are taking place that's drawing people. And so it's a very shallow church. I think that
which is the case in any size church.
Yeah, I think that that's an incorrect argument. I think that you can make the arguments that any churches, there's some mega churches that are weak and shallow. There's some small churches that are weak and shallow.
There are.
And you can make that argument anywhere. But there are a lot of people that have expressed some type of negativity toward mega churches. And by the way, in case anybody asks, my definition of a mega church back years ago was not a definition that stuck. I wanted it to be 1,000. And up, because that way you get about the top 2% of churches in the United States. 2,000 in attendance and up is the accepted definition. I lost on that one.
Yeah.
Kind of like I wanted to name the millennials Bridgers. That didn't work either.
No.
So I got to stop naming things and trying to do things. Well, just follow the crowd.
Of the two of us, only one of us goes to a mega church.
Okay. That would be I.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know the size of your church.
It's not to 1,000 yet.
Okay.
But
yeah, there you go.
Number seven is the number of hours a pastor works each week.
Boy, it's another one of those areas that I just, again, we can go back to a previous podcast and we can talk about the diminishing of respect and esteem for pastors. And this is one of those areas where people look at the pastor, and some of them, and Jonathan, I'm going to guess it's a minority of them, think that the pastor is a lazy bum who hardly puts in any hours. There are a few like that. There are a few who go into ministry and spend a lot of time playing golf or something like that, but not the vast majority. The vast majority of pastors have trouble turning off their switch at any time. The vast majority of pastors are on call 24/7. The vast majority of pastors, by the time they add up anything that you could call part of their work week, are at 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week. But there are arguments about this, and they'll talk about a pastor having a weekday off. Well, just remember that a pastor works not only on Sundays, and you could argue that other people come on Sunday, but that pastor's working in the night, that pastor's working on special call. It's hard for a pastor to take a vacation these days because of the expectations.
There are also expectations of mandatory office hours where he can be available for, you know, congregants just to stop in at any time. And, you know, that really, I think, hampers his effectiveness in study and his effectiveness in counseling and pastoral care.
And being in the community.
Yeah.
And being on call, and the list goes on and on and on. So I am with you. I am a proponent of pastors working less. Now, you may argue with me there, but I think most pastors are workaholics, and I think most pastors put in too many hours rather than too few hours.
Number eight is why people leave a church.
One of my early blog posts, and I haven't been a blogger for that long. How long have I been a blogger? About 3 years?
I'll count 2.5.
2.5 since, okay, about
when
2.
You really got serious about it.
One of the early posts that I did had to do with why people leave a church. And for its time, it was a highly viewed post. And this is closely related to the other issue that we spoke of about why churches die. But people have strong opinions about why people have left the church. Sometimes they want to blame it on the pastor. Sometimes they want to blame it on other church members. Sometimes they want to say that it is a ministry or program that if we had that in our church, we know that these people would not leave. And so sometimes when you have an exodus of a person or persons in a church, that creates dissension because people want to talk about the reason why. Now, I am not going to suggest for a moment that having people exit the church is necessarily a good thing, but it's not always a bad thing. Sometimes when a person leaves a church, he or she may be a better fit in another church. They may do more capable ministry. They may be more philosophically aligned with that church. So don't always think that a departure is bad. Sometimes a departure can be healthy for the church from which the person has departed, and for the person who is leaving.
The ninth cause of church arguments that you listed here is the role of a pastor's wife. And it's not really the role, but the misunderstood or wanted role of a pastor's wife.
I am blessed in this area. I served four churches that, for the most part, and there were always a few people that were exceptions, that let my wife be who she is. Nellie Jo, I think, is a very good pianist and organist, but she had no desire to play in the church, and they never asked her to play in the church. She loves instrumental music, but she prefers something like a flute, a clarinet, or a stringed instrument like a violin. She's capable in all of those, and so she, if the church had an orchestra, for example, you don't hear that much these days. But I was pastor of a church that had a small orchestra, and so she played the clarinet in the orchestra, and she loved it. That's what she wanted to do. She didn't want the spotlight on her just as the organist or the pianist. She wanted to be with a group of people. She got to do ministry the way she wanted to. She got to spend time with her family, particularly raising three boys, without the expectation that she is everywhere. And so I just have to say that I was blessed, and Nellie Jo was blessed, with a church that let my wife be the wife. That isn't always the case. And in some churches, there are expectations that the wife become a second pastor in the church, and that whatever there's a need. And there's another thing. Sometimes a pastor's wife becomes the conduit for criticism to the pastor, which is highly unfortunate. But I got to say, when I presented this particular issue, there were several who disagreed. And let me say this. There are often people who come in on my blog, and they might do so as a result to this podcast as well, that, hey, some of us are women pastors out there. Refer to the pastor's husband at times. A couple of things. My theology is that of a complementarian. That's the theology of my denomination. And so we talk about male senior pastors, and that is our theological belief. And I would simply say anybody who has a disagreement with that is welcome to comment and welcome to express their perspective and to talk about what it's like to be a female pastor. But understand that I'm coming from the perspective of male. And that seems to come up from time to time, and I just want clarity. I just want all of them to know they're welcome, but I have my own perspective.
The final cause of church arguments that you listed here was perspectives on pastors' children. Now, we did a podcast a couple weeks ago on the pastor's kids. It kind of flows right out of that.
We did a podcast on it. I did a blog post on it. There were
strong... Biggest blog post ever on the site, by the way.
There were lots of strong emotion. It even passed another very popular post that stayed at the top for a long time. But this topic drew a lot of discussion. But most of the discussion on the blog post was from PKs, pastors' kids themselves, many of them adults now, of course, and their perspective. And to me, this particular issue ended up to be a healthy discussion. There were a few barbs thrown, but for the most part, it ended up being a healthy discussion. I want church members to understand that pastors' kids are kids, and I want them to understand that these PKs, as they are sometimes affectionately or non-affectionately called, should not have any different expectations placed upon them than any other child in the church. And if we can get to that place where we just let the kids be the kids and let the parents of the kids raise the kids instead of trying to put our own expectations upon them, then I think that we will have healthier churches. I was not as concerned about the level of comment that went here. It was a lot of it because for most of them, they were grown pastor, former yeah. pastor's kids. I guess they're still pastor's kids, but they're grown now. And they were most of them were reflecting their hurt and their pain. I know that our friend Barnabas Piper will have a book yes. coming out on pastor's children in the near future. It's not published with us, but I know that it's going to be a good book. And so that will be interesting to read as yeah. well.
And you've got three kids that know what that's like as well.
Yeah, I raised Nellie Jo and I raised three PKs, and for the most part, I think they have a healthy view of the church. There were certainly some exceptions at times, but for the most part,
two of the three turned out okay.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on the one that did not. No, that's not true, Nellie Jo. Jonathan's baiting me there.
Yeah, but you've in the past you've always given credit for that all three of them to Nellie Jo
for good reason.
Yes. All right, and so we have a listener question this week, and Keith, you're going to get a copy of I Am a Church Member for us using your question here, and Keith really. He brings up the color of carpet and things like that we talked about at the top of the show. But his big question is why? Why do churches go so far as to split? And he lists, you know, color of carpet, choir robes, pulpit or not, which, you know, choir robes and pulpit, that's another thing that you can get. There's two more blog posts for you.
Wow.
And carpet color, I guess, as well. But his big question is why?
Well, it's a good question, Keith. And I'm glad you asked it, and I'm glad you're getting the book as a result of it. It boils down to this. What is the purpose of a church member? Does a church member function as one who has his or her needs met and my preferences met? If so, they're going to argue about their own preferences. Or does a church member come into church and ask, how can I serve? How can I give? In other words, the biblical perspective of what it means to be a part of the body of Christ. Some of these silly splits that we have are because we have created churches that have country club mentalities where membership means I am entitled to certain things, instead of churches that have members that say, what can I do? What can I give? How can I be a functioning part of the body of Christ? So as a result, we have fights, and it's over what I want, what my personal preference is, me, myself, and I, and that is a shame, and I hope that more and more churches, as the back door becomes an issue and as high expectations become a greater issue, will get over these silly arguments.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by Connected, My Life in the Church, a new six-week study from Lifeway Christian Resources based around the book, I Am a Church Member. For more information, visit lifeway.com. That'll do it for this week's show. Dr. Rainer, any final closing thoughts?
When you talk about arguments, it's going to be a pretty negative podcast.
Negative?
We're going to talk about things that people argue about. But I still want to say that here's the good news. As churches hear about the arguments and as church members and leaders hear about them, I think we're giving them opportunity to see what we need to be avoiding. And as a result, churches get healthier.
And that's the goal of Rainer on Leadership every week, is to help churches and pastors be healthier leaders and healthier bodies of Christ. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.